Hi, this is Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire, here with today's edition of Soundbite, our daily interview series featuring researchers, thought leaders, and newsmakers in the world of high-performance computing. On today's edition, we'll be talking to Dan Stanzione, acting director at the Texas Advanced Computing Center. We'll be checking in with the first year of progress on the Stampede supercomputer and talking about some lessons learned working on the novel architecture and with the high user demand on Stampede. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Nicole. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks for joining us. So congratulations on your first year using the Stampede supercomputer and on your new appointment.
Thanks very much. It's been a fantastic year for Stampede, and we're really proud of all that's accomplished, and I'm really excited to be taking over the reins of TAC and have the chance to lead the wonderful team we have here.
So we've written quite a bit about Stampede because it's a pretty interesting machine. For those who aren't aware, can you give a brief overview on why it's an interesting or unique resource?
Sure. So we designed Stampede to replace the previous Ranger system that was here at TAC. And so Stampede is funded through the National Science Foundation's Track 2 program to put very large systems in place to serve the broader open science community. Really, anyone who has an NSF grant or doing open research for other federal agencies. We serve a very large community of users across a very, very wide range of applications. So when we put Stampede together, we were looking for a general purpose architecture that would support everyone in the scientific community as best we can, and had some flexibility to have different subsystems to support different needs. And then also we wanted to put an innovative twist on it to be forward-looking and look at the next generation of capabilities as well. So what we came up with is a system that at its core is an Intel Xeon-based system integrated for us by Dell that has about 100,000 processors and about 2.2 petaflops of performance in the Intel Xeon component. It has some specialized subsystems, including a large shared memory system to support some needs in that area. It has a GPU subsystem to support the need for visualization directly on the system. We produce so much data at this scale nowadays that it just doesn't make sense to move data somewhere else to do visualization. So we wanted to have GPUs for visualization. We also have GPUs in the system for some GPU computing. And then what we call the innovative component on the system per the NSF solicitation is we've implemented a Xeon Phi card in every single node on the system, and a few of them with two. So we have almost 7,000 Xeon Phis, about another 425,000 processors worth within the system to make the total for the system over 500,000 processors. And with the Xeon Phi, the Intel mini-core architecture, that gives us about another 7.5 petaflops of performance, so the whole system is almost 10 petaflops.
Yeah, it's a very impressive system. Can you describe your experiences? You were one of the first large-scale users of the Xeon Phi. What are some of the challenges and benefits that you've seen?
Sure. So The Xeon Phi is a pretty interesting architecture, and it's one of several solutions that are out there in the marketplace, along with GPUs and those doing FPGA computing, about really changing the power and performance curves that are the current trends in supercomputing. We know that power is growing. Transistors and operations are getting more efficient in every generation, but our demand for computation is growing faster than our power efficiency is growing. So we still end up with substantially bigger and systems that take more and more power. And in fact, Stampede, though about, just in the base system, without even considering the Xeon Phi, is about four times the compute power that Ranger was, but it's also about twice the physical power and physical footprint of Ranger. And that's just not a curve we can stay on forever. The Xeon Phi is Intel's approach to really changing these power and performance curves by giving us simpler cores with a simpler architecture, but a lot more of them in the same size package, so that although we have sort of the same power per transistor, we have a lot less power per floating point operation. And again, the GPU guys and the ARM guys and the FPGA guys are all taking similar slants, slightly different approaches to looking at that same problem. How do we lower power per operation? So we went with the Xeon Phi. And we sort of decided on the Phi versus some of those other alternatives, and we really went through all of them and looked at them pretty carefully, because although in any of these architectures, because you have much more parallelism, you know, many more copies of the same simpler circuits on the chip, you're going to have to expose a lot more parallelism in your application. And that's work for anybody in any of these architectures, but it was sort of the most familiar to the most of our, the largest swath of our users, because it is the familiar x86 programming model for the most part. It is OpenMP for threading, MPI for task-based parallelism, which is what we've been asking users to do for years. And it's just more of that. It's a more extreme version of that that you have to take into account for Xeon Phi. So we were the first really big deployment of those, and like in any bleeding edge deployment, there's certainly some challenges rolling them out. You know, an odd one with Stampede is just because we had a pretty aggressive schedule on getting the system out the door. We got the compute nodes from Dell before the Xeon Phis were available and integrated them on the floor, and we had to install the Xeon Phis by hand, and it turned out the problems you don't think about when building a big supercomputer. It was, you know, a little north of 150,000 screws that we had to take out and put back in to install the 7,000 or so cards into the system that we had to install.
That's called lovingly installed, right?
Lovingly installed, yes. Everything you get a PhD in computational science to do. We went through an awful lot of screwdriver batteries in the process of doing that. But we've had a really, I think, a positive experience bringing them up, and we've seen the usage grow over time. You know, it was a new architecture, and unlike, you know, some past rollouts of technology, we really started our deployment at scale. And there were a couple of machines at our center and other centers where we were able to give a limited number of users some early access to them. But for a lot of users, the first time they saw Xeon Phi was in Stampede, as opposed to, you know, starting at the desktop and having an experimental system for a couple of years and a few years for the programming model to sort of sink in. We sort of had a day one, you know, early user was a couple of months before production. And for most of our users, their first time ever compiling or logging into a Xeon Phi was when they hit Stampede. So we've seen sort of the whole life cycle of having to port over to these processors. And so in the first few months, we saw a lot of people doing very small runs and sort of kicking the tires on it. You know, it was a fair percentage of the jobs, but maybe only 1 or 2% of the cycles on the system were going to Xeon Phi in those early days. But we've seen it sort of catch on with a number of user groups. We've seen a few user groups move into production and then scale up the size of their runs to, you know, tens of thousands of cores, several hundred Phi cards. And so we've seen that grow, you know, by an order of magnitude to where, you know, from 1 or 2% of the cycles every month to 10 or 20% of the cycles on the system every month are going to use the Xeon Phi. And that's all over the first year. So the adoption has been pretty gratifying, and it's grown pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. And you've done a lot of benchmarking there, as far as I know, between both GPU and Xeon Phi. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and they're, like I said, they're similar ideas in a lot of ways. You know, expose parallelism, require codes to have a whole lot of parallelism, and do that, get, you know, better power efficiency per floating point operation. And you really see that with both architectures. And we've seen use cases where really either one, you know, can be somewhat superior. Their peak performances of the current products is pretty close. There's constantly leapfrogging as new versions of the Phi come out and new versions of the GPUs come out. A brand new K40 GPU just came out that has a substantially higher peak performance, until the next generation of the Xeon Phi comes out. So they sort of leap back and forth on that. And we have seen some applications do better than others. It's a difficult thing to compare in some ways, because you can't run the same codes across the two. And we found, by and large, that the differences in the quality of the implementation of the code have a lot more to do than the hardware with the overall performance. And so in the Phi case, we can almost always take the same version of the code and run it natively on the Xeon and natively on the Xeon Phi, but usually when you do that and you don't make any code changes, it runs pretty badly, right? Because you need many more threads, much more parallelism. The serial clock rate, the speed for serial code is a little lower So you need to do some optimization work. By the same token, you know, when you go to a GPU, you need to port your code to CUDA, and that involves changing your implementation, sometimes pretty simply, sometimes pretty dramatically, but you're not working with the same code anymore. So, and, you know, good code always runs faster than bad code. So, you know, occasionally we'll see an application that gets a speed up of several hundred on a GPU versus a processor, or on a Xeon 5 versus a processor. But almost always that's because we've changed the implementation to fit the architecture a little bit better, right? The ratio of peak performance in a GPU to a dual socket CPU machine is about 4 to 1. You know, the ratio of peak performance between a Xeon Phi and a CPU is 3 or 4 to 1. So if you're seeing 10 to 1, that's not hardware, that's implementation of the software. That's more than the theoretical peak of the hardware can be. So doing good apples-to-apples comparison is really hard, because usually when you're porting to GPU for a benchmark, you're paying a lot of attention to getting good performance, and the code you're starting from, they were probably paying attention to getting the right answer more often than not, and not really paying attention to performance. So, and, you know, it's true of Xeon Phi, and it's true of GPU. You know, we found that the best on either architecture tends to be codes that use the most common linear algebra routines built on BLAS or MKL. We found that there are, you know, applications where we can push and get 60 or 70% out of either architecture, of the theoretical peak out of either architecture, when using, you know, the standard numerical libraries, and do very well. And on other ones, it seems to be just really, really implementation dependent, not really even algorithm dependent. It just depends on the programmer and how they've implemented their code. But, you know, we have users with success on both platforms.
It's been a matter of optimization than overall, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and you know, yeah. Skill and experience of the programmer is at least as important as the choice of architecture. Mm-hmm. I mean, the good news is we have these architectures available that can give us a lot more performance. And I think the exciting part of it is whether you're looking at GPUs or Xeon Phis that are both sort of in the accelerator world right now, you know, they're on a separate card, they're offloaded from the CPU. I think they both foreshadow what's going to be in the CPUs of the future, the not very distant future, in the mainline processors. And so we think the work that we're putting in now to optimize codes for these architectures is certainly going to pay off down the line as these become part of the mainline processor features. So it's not so much whether you should adopt them, it's whether you want to get a jump on getting ready for the future.
Right. Good point. Well, let's move into system utilization. You know, what's it been like? I'm sure there are users scrambling all over themselves to get a chance to run their code on this machine. What types of codes are running, and what's the demand look like?
Yeah, so we do have a pretty high demand on Stampede. The system's utilized all the time, 24/7, 365. The way we allocate time on the system, because it's a National Science Foundation supported system, users write proposals through the Exceed project to what's called the XRAC process, the Exceed Resource Allocation Committee, and there's a committee of faculty convened by Exceed outside of TAC that looks at those proposals and decides who gets time on the system, and 90% of the cycles on the system are allocated through that process. And so recently we've been getting those proposals are for about 500% of our available time. The demand exceeds what we can provide, about 5 to 1. So fortunately, we don't have to make a lot of those calls. The XRAC makes the decisions. We tell them how many service units, how many hours we have available on the system, and they sort of have to cut down those requests through a pretty grueling process to the time that people actually get on the system. So we try and, you know, we're pretty careful not to over allocate too much, because we want to have a very responsive system and not have huge queue wait times because we put too many people on. So we do try and limit it that way. But if you look at the system at any given time, it's essentially full. You know, big HPC systems never really show 100% utilization, because you're always trying to schedule the next big job. And, you know, if a job needs 500 nodes and you have 400 free ones, those are going to be idle to the job finishes on those last 100 that you need. So, you know, you often see 91, 94% full, something along those numbers, if you just look at the raw metric. But there's almost always jobs waiting in that situation, which means the system's really full. So during this first year, you know, that ended January 7th was the first anniversary of the system. We had 1,247 different projects run code on the system, about 2.2 million jobs, 3,400 different users successfully ran a job on the system. So it's really been a huge diversity of codes. If I was to pick a few, you know, and like I said, across this project, it was almost 350 institutions, more than 100 fields of science. So it's hard to say the machine's for one or the other. But a couple, we've done several different really interesting and fairly large projects around second-generation biofuels with folks at the University of Illinois, a different project with folks at the National Renewable Energy Lab, mostly molecular dynamics type situations, but looking at how to design enzymes to maybe perhaps increase the cellulosic content in a plant or to do better biofuels and biofuel processing. So that's been one area that we've noticed a lot of usage on. There's been some in carbon sequestration, doing some carbon nanotubes to catch or nanotubes to catch CO2 and structures to do CO2 sequestration with some groups from MIT have been a fairly large user on the machine. We've done a lot of work with the Southern California Earthquake Center, and that's one that's had some sort of immediate impact. We did a lot of very big runs with them for the California earthquake rupture forecast, and that's a big simulation exercise that feeds into the U.S. Geological Service's hazard maps, and those hazard maps in turn are used to set the building codes and the insurance rates throughout California for buildings. So that's one that, you know, had a pretty quick impact. And so those are sort of system-wide. We've seen a few on the Xeon Phi as well. You know, we're seeing a lot of, again, molecular dynamics around some flu vaccine work that's been a big Xeon Phi user. We've seen a lot of quantum chromodynamics on the Phi, and we're starting to see more and more weather forecasting running on the Phi as well. But the system's really been used in all sorts of different ways.
It's cutting-edge applications on a cutting-edge machine. If I can make a recommendation for the future, I'd really like to see TAC or someone do an FPGA, APU, DSP, GPU, Xeon Phi system.
You know, we'd really like to, actually. And we've done some of that at a small scale through what we call the ACE Lab here at TAC, the Advanced Computing Experiment Lab, or Evaluation Lab, rather. The trick is getting someone to fund all those small systems because all the vendors would like us to pay for them when we do a bake-off like that. But we do have a small FPGA system. We're hoping to get an APU system in, but we don't quite have all the nodes at the exact same scale and the exact same hosts, and that would be a really interesting comparison. You know, if any NSF program officers are listening, we'd be happy to do that. They're happy to fund it.
I'd be happy to come down and observe and report on that, too. That would be quite a bit of fun. So, well, very good. We'll keep tabs on what's going on at TAC throughout the year, as always. Thanks for your time, Dan.
Happy to do it, Nicole. And thanks a lot to the audience for listening, and thanks for having me.